Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 2 of the Summer Library Podcast. I am Paul Sorrell, along with Mr. T.R. Parker.
No. This is not the Super Bowl or the NBA Finals or any of that.
Oh,
but the Super Bowl is coming up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who do you got?
I like the Giants. I like Eli. I mean, I like the Mannings, and
I
think it's a good family. I've always enjoyed, you know, watching that game against San Francisco where it was the Giants in San Francisco. It came down to the wire. Man, like, he took so many hits.
Yeah, he did.
And just it seemed like every play he was just getting his shoulder pads pounded into the grass.
Right.
But he always got up and he completed the big passes when he needed to. So it was, I just like the Giants. I'm going to Boston this spring with the GO trip. And so I should like Boston teams. And I like the Celtics and I like the Red Sox. But I don't know. The Patriots have always just – I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I'm going to shut up now.
If you have a preference,
yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I like the Giants, and I'm hoping that they will win. And it's really kind of a Super Bowl of irony. You have a Manning being the quarterback in Indianapolis.
Right.
But it's not...
Not Eli.
Well,
I mean, not
it's not Peyton.
Not Peyton, right.
And then, of course, all the stuff going along with him and his injury, and will he be back or won't he be back, or will he ever play football again? And so it's kind of an interesting, and I'm looking forward to the game. I did not watch one moment of last year's Packers Steelers games. Had no interest, but this one,
I'm a bit interested in this one. I liked the fact that I liked New Orleans too a couple of years ago, but so the Super Bowl will be this Sunday night. The Oscar nominations, the Academy Awards, the nominees came out, and you've seen more of the movies than I have. You just saw The Artist.
I saw The Artist.
Yeah,
I really liked that.
Yeah,
and the way they did it was so cool. I mean, it was like a silent movie, and the actor, Jean somebody from France, I don't know who he was. I mean, you would look at him and think, this guy was snatched from the silent movie era because he was so convincing as that character and as a silent movie star. And I really liked him. He had a big, broad smile and really great expressions with his face. And the music, the orchestral score behind it was just phenomenal. And it was just really an interesting, different type of movie. And I'll probably buy it on DVD.
Well, good. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I've heard your review, which is really positive. Another friend here had more of a lukewarm review on that one, but I haven't seen it. Now, I know that Hugo was nominated based on a beautiful book, which we have in the library. I think it's The Adventures of Hugo Capré. It's a children's book, but man, it is beautifully illustrated with original drawings and all of that. That's available in the library. But the film was nominated for 11 Academy Awards, which is the most of any film. Have you seen that?
I have not.
Neither
I wanted
have I.
to see
yeah.
it, and then I wanted to see it a little later in its run.
Yeah.
When I got interested in wanting to see it, and then by the time I was going to see it, it was gone.
Yeah. I want to see it too. There are a few other things that were nominated that are, you know, The Tree of Life was featured here. Actually, they did a showing at Barefoot's Joe. In the fall, and I saw that a couple of times. Actually, I own the movie, and it was really a beautiful film, kind of an epic look at the plight of mankind. Anyway, it's hard to unpack, but it's really really gorgeous. A movie. I think what is it? The one about Paris with the Woody Allen film. Why am I drawing a blank? Midnight in Paris.
Okay.
Did you see that?
I did.
That
not.
Was nominated for Best.
You
Picture.
Saw that? Didn't
yeah.
You?
It was great. It was phenomenal. That was another thing that I actually, I don't know if you all know this, listeners, but the library has a Facebook page, and also we have a YouTube channel now. But I put a video on the library's Facebook page of a film, a short film that was done at the Louisiana State University. That was nominated for Best Animated Short, and it's all about books and flying books. It's a really incredibly
and we're not talking books that people throw around as flying.
Well, yeah, no, although I did see one of our students throwing books in the library the other day, and I got onto them for it, but in a nice way. Yeah, it was funny. Good. They dropped a book, and I joked with them. But I think it's called The Magical Flying Books of Mr. Morris Lessmore.
Wow, lots of M's.
It is really, yeah, Morris Lessmore, like more is less, you know, Morris Lessmore. He's a very simple guy. You would like him. He's kind of, you would like Mr. Morris.
Are you saying I'm simple?
You are kind of to yourself and reserved at times, and you enjoy the simple things in life. And
I'm a simple,
I appreciate
complex
that.
Person.
Yeah, that's true. That's to be sure. But our audience doesn't need to know that, do they?
No.
Sure
they don't care.
Yeah. So check out the Magical Flying Books of Mr. Morris Lessmore on the library's Facebook page. It is really a neat little short film. It's about 12 minutes long.
And another very cool thing that the library offers now is?
Oh, we have iPads. You could actually watch Mr. Morris Lessmore on the iPad.
Yeah.
And it would be like your own little TV. And so we have a couple of iPads. They're located at the circulation desk. There are signs all throughout the library. They'll check out for 4 hours. You can take them out of the library. So feel free. Stop by the library. Check out an iPad. Take it to class. Take notes. Use it to research the databases. Back everything up. If you find an article, you know, store it in your iBooks and save it. And then it should be backed up in the cloud when you log in at your computer or whatnot. But check out the iPads. They're pretty nifty
cool
little
things.
Toys.
Yeah.
You can check them out from the library. It's a new semester. It's the spring.
Yes.
We're excited. We're finishing up our conversions to a new exciting catalog. If you have any questions on how to use that or find items in the library, you can always schedule a research coach. We're excited. I'm excited about this spring.
Yes. And we're also excited about the guest who has joined us today, who we will be talking to in a few minutes, and that is Dr. James Patterson, the author of a new book. And what is the title of that new book?
It's a biography of James Robinson Graves, J.R. Graves. We actually have a special J.R. Graves collection in some of our old and rare materials, as I understand. The subtitle is Staking the Boundaries of Baptist Identity. I can't remember off the top of his head his official title. Oh, it's on the back of the book. But James Patterson is University Professor of Christian Thought and Tradition, and he's the Associate Dean of School of Theology and Missions at Union, which essentially means he teaches church history. He's a really fascinating individual. I like him a lot and have enjoyed getting to know him. And we're just thankful that he's going to join us today on the show.
Right.
Talk about his new book, talk about his research.
And we'll be back with him right after this.
Okay. Thanks.
Back. Welcome to our second segment of Season 2, Episode 2. A lot of twos in there.
Yeah.
And we are very honored to welcome a special guest with us, Dr. James Patterson, who is the University Professor of Christian Thought and Tradition here at Union, and as well as the Associate Dean of the School of Theology and Missions. And he is the author of a new book called James Robinson Graves, Staking the Boundaries of Baptist Identity. And James Robinson Graves, also known as J.R. Graves, has a special role in our library. But first, welcome to James Patterson. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Yes, we appreciate it very much. So James Robinson Graves, we'll get to him a little bit later, but first a little bit about James A. Patterson. How did you come about to be at Union?
Well, it's a story that goes back probably over 14 years ago. I was teaching at Mid-America Seminary in Memphis at the time. My daughter was an undergraduate here at Union, and I had met George Guthrie in different contexts from being on campus and probably even back on a preview day when we had brought my daughter. And we had had some conversations, and then one summer he calls. In fact, it was right after our then future son-in-law had asked for our daughter's hand in marriage, and like within 24 hours, I had a call from George asking if I'd consider coming to Union to teach. This was summer of 98, and actually he was talking about fall of 99 as a starting point, so we had some time to think about it, pray about it. And I did interview in fall of 98. That was like a year ahead of time almost. And then after the interview, I was offered a position, and I accepted that and started in fall of 99.
Now, how did the proposal of marriage of your daughter and your then son-in-law, how did that affect the decision? Were they living somewhere close to here, or were they where?
Well, she was she lived in a dorm for her first 2 years at Union. Her husband, or her husband-to-be at the time, worked in Memphis.
Okay, so she was at Union at the time.
Right.
Okay.
And the plan was that they would get married in the summer of 99 and live in Bells. So she could commute to Union and he could commute to Memphis until she finished. So she had completed 2 years when I started teaching here.
Okay. That's great. So you sort of joined your daughter here. That's exciting. Yeah. Now, you also had a deep Baptist heritage, like many at Union do. Can you tell us a little bit about your background growing up? You're from Philadelphia, as I understand. Is that right, the Philadelphia area?
The Jersey side.
Okay, the Jersey side. But you're a big Philadelphia Eagles, Flyers and all that, right?
6-7 miles away from the bridge. My father worked in Philadelphia. I grew up with those teams. Well, a couple of them came along later, but so I've retained my identity there. But I was raised American Baptist because, I mean, when I was young, Southern Baptist had a little bit of work in New Jersey, but not real extensive. And that was my upbringing.
Mm-hmm. And then you went. Where did you go to college? I know that's on your bio, but where did you do the undergrad
at Rutgers University, which at one time was the Dutch Reformed College, but became the state university after World War II. I actually studied political science at Rutgers.
Yeah, that's interesting because there aren't that many state universities that have a name like named after someone or that sounds like. I was always under the impression that Rutgers was actually a private school until recently. I've learned a little bit about it, and actually recently heard a podcast, I believe it was on This American Life, but about the difference between Rutgers and Princeton. But you actually went to both. Is that correct? Because you later went to Princeton Theological Seminary after.
Right, which is actually a separate institution from Princeton University, but they're right next door to each other, and they have cross-registration privileges and library usages and all that stuff.
So. Yeah, a few of my classmates went on to do graduate work there at Princeton Theological Seminary. But before that, you spent time in the Boston area at Gordon-Conwell.
Right.
Okay, so two sort of maybe non-Baptist institutions, but how did those years sort of affect your interest? What did you study at those places? I mean, obviously at Gordon-Conwell, you probably did your MDiv, and then later Princeton. What was your sort of focus in your PhD, and how did that help you to identify with the things that you're sort of interested in teaching now?
I'd always liked history, and I think it has certain links to political science anyway. And then I really got interested in church history at Gordon-Conwell, particularly Richard Lovelace, who was one of my professors, and he was very engaging, and I learned a lot. So when I went to Princeton, I concentrated in church history. And so my PhD is basically in church history.
Okay. Were you a history major as an undergrad?
No, political science.
Yeah. And so that, but they many times those are actually in the same department there. Like you said, there's close links. Well, that's great. I've always thought that church history was what I would want to study if I were to go on. I was a history major as an undergraduate. So then you started your career teaching. As I understand, you went to a small Christian college in Georgia.
Toccoa Falls.
Okay. And how many years were you there?
I was there 12 years and taught all the histories, not just church history, but U.S. history, world history, the whole gamut.
That's great. Did you enjoy that? Did you enjoy having the sort of the diversity and the sort of?
Well, it was hard on preparations, especially the first couple of years, but it meant that my day was not boring because you know, I'd start off usually with church history and then maybe move to ancient civ and then teach U.S. history in the afternoon. So, you know, it's never a dull moment.
Sure. Sounds exciting. But so you after all of this time and growing up in Philadelphia, going to seminary and in Boston, and then later in New Jersey at Princeton, and then you moved to Georgia, and then you moved to West Tennessee. So came south of the Mason-Dixon line and never left.
Right.
And so the next step for you was Mid-America Baptist Seminary, that was where you began to develop some of the interest in Baptist heritage and Southern Baptist life. Is that true, and can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that's the first place where I taught Baptist history, mm-hmm. which was a required class in their MDiv program and, well, in their ADiv program also. And in addition, some elements there were landmarkers, some of the professors, some of the students. And I was not real familiar with that movement. I'd seen a few references to it in Georgia, but I became aware of it more at Mid-America. It sort of piqued my interest that, you know, what's this all about historically? And I can't say that I immediately wanted to do a book on J.R. Graves, but, you know, he was kind of a fascinating figure, and I wanted to be able to explain a little better what was this phenomenon.
Do you think there is a lacking of historical context for most people who claim to be Baptist or who practice the Baptist faith? And why? Why do you think that there's probably a lot missing there?
I think that's true. We don't have a outstanding founder like some of the other denominations. You know, we don't have a John Wesley or a John Calvin or a Martin Luther. So, and there's been this landmark idea that we go back to the first century, you know, this trail of blood that Baptists have been around since First Baptist Church of Jerusalem and that kind of thing. And right. So some Baptists just assume that we've always been there. And then I think a lot of churches don't do a real good job of dealing with the Baptist heritage.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that? Or do you think they are, and I use this word in its context, I mean, ignorant, you know, not stupid or dumb, but, you know, just ignorant of some of the history.
Unaware.
Yeah, yes, unaware. Yeah. Do you think they are unaware?
I think part of that's the culture we live in. I think we have a generation overall, Baptist or otherwise,
right.
that isn't as interested in history maybe as they should be. I think our public schools probably don't do real well in
just general history.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so maybe like this J.R. Graves character that you've written this biography on sort of attempted in his ministry and in his life in this region. I know he's a controversial figure, and maybe you can help us understand that in the short time that we have. If not, read the book, everyone. It's trying to sort of recapture that identity, or trying to sort of lay that identity and that heritage out for everyone. Would you think that's a right assessment? And how did he go about?
Well, that and he was dealing with other denominations that he saw as competition. I mean, the Mid-South was all kinds of things going on: Presbyterians, Restorationists, Methodists. Especially, and I think part of his motive, I don't know how conscious this was in his mind, but part of his concern was, well, we need to show our heritage like some of these other groups show theirs. And in his case, he went back to this successionist idea that, well, there's always been Baptists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. From a long time ago, I'm from a Baptist background, and coming to Union as a librarian has helped me to sort of reconnect with my Baptist early childhood. And in many ways, I'm unaware of some of these things. I'm looking forward to reading through this a little bit more. I haven't had time. I just got a copy the other day. When was it Tuesday or Wednesday when you came in the library and so graciously gave us a copy, one of your author copies, and signed it to the students, faculty, staff, and administration of Union University with gratitude and appreciation, especially for the good work of the library staff. And we're just so grateful for you saying that. And so in reading through the preface and the introduction, I noticed that you just mentioned so many librarians and people in the library who have really just done a great job. Paul Sorrell, our very own, our beloved Paul Sorrell, was one that you mentioned, and we're thankful for that.
Yes, and I was quite surprised and honored. Thank you very much for
Well, one of the things that happened was that Steve Baker left at a point, and he had been my main contact for, like, finding microfilms for me, and then with him gone, you kind of stepped in there. I needed to verify some more microfilm things and actually pull up some I had looked at before and had missed something. And, you know, you came to the rescue. And I think there was, you know, a few interlibrary learns as well.
Right. And you mentioned as well, you mentioned the dean of libraries at Southwestern. There is that right? And you went to do some took some research leave and went there for a time to study. Can you tell us a little bit about you know, we have a lot of students and even graduate students here who are doing starting to learn what the research process looks like and writing papers. And as librarians, we attempt to assist in that. Can you tell us a little bit about that process, the way the research process unfolded for you?
Well, I had the research leave. In fact, I was interviewed a while ago by Mark Kaler about my research leave in the spring of 08. Unfortunately, that was the same semester as the tornado. And in fact, I had barely begun my research leave and the tornado hit. And then my wife's father died 2 weeks after the tornado. So there was a lot going on there in the early part. And then finally, things settled down. I was able to get my work done. But one of my interests in that leave was to visit libraries that, you know, normally during a regular semester, you just don't have the time to do that. So I used the one here. In fact, Steve Baker helped me a great deal. I actually didn't have an office that semester because they moved the theology and missions faculty out of Jennings so they could do the renovations. There was carpet damage, wall damage, other things.
The tornado.
So I didn't have an office. He gave me a place in the library where I could do the books that didn't circulate. He got, you know, a bunch of these older books, many written by J.R. Graves himself. And he had a table for me, and I just was able to come in there and work on that. So I did work here, and then I went up to Nashville. There's a Southern Baptist Historical Library there in the Executive Committee building. It's a very good library, and anyone doing work in Baptist history would probably need to go there at some point. And I actually ended up making 3 visits there during the time of my research leave. I mean, fortunately, it's only a 2-hour ride. And Bill Sumners is the head librarian there at the SBHLA. And that was very valuable. Some dissertations that normally I would have had to get through interlibrary loan, I was able to access there. I went to Southwestern, I think, in the spring. I spent a week there. I knew the librarian from previous contexts, and he and his wife graciously invited me to stay in their house for the week that I was there. He gave me a little room. Actually, it was a big room, but he gave me a table in one of their rooms that wasn't very busy. And he had all kinds of stuff brought in for me. He got his library staff to work, and they were very good in lining up stuff for me to. And it was a very useful week, very productive week. And then I had one other trip. I went up to Southern Seminary, and I didn't stay quite as long there as I did at Southwestern, but main concern there was some archival collections that I thought might touch on Graves. And as it turned out, I didn't get as much from those archives as I had hoped. But again, there were dissertations and other sources that I was able to use while I was there.
Now, speaking of sources, and generally when you're doing a historical biography or doing writing in history, you try to get as many primary sources as you can, letters, sermons, journals, and you know, historical records and whatnot. Now, I understand that you mentioned in the preface that a lot of that does not exist on graves, but you were able to sort of address more of his theology in this book. What types of sources were you predominantly using?
Well, he did publish several books, and he was editor of the Tennessee Baptist for 40-plus years. And most of the time that came out weekly, and usually every issue he contributed in one way or another. So there was a massive amount of material that he wrote. Now, some of that overlapped. Some of the things he published in books previously had appeared in the Tennessee Baptist, so it wasn't like it was always fresh, original stuff. On the issue of letters and diaries and journals, as far as we know, nothing exists. No scholar seems to be aware of any collection like that of sort of unpublished manuscript-type material or personal items. Graves was kind of close to the vest with a lot of things, and it may be that that kind of thing was destroyed, but no one's been able to track, if there were any private papers, what happened to them. I mean, it would have been nice to have had something like that. I mean, I did have some letters that I found here and there, but no collection of letters. So, you know, there was that kind of gap that, you know, I tried to fill, and, you know, I made several inquiries, and nobody who's worked on graves has been able to find anything like that, except for a few items up in Nashville that are part of their collection.
So what was it about him that piqued your interest and wanted you to write a book about him?
Well, he's considered the founder of what's called landmarkism. And, you know, I had begun to learn of this more while I was at Mid-America. And, I mean, we even had some students who were from actual landmark denominations. Graves himself never left the Southern Baptist Convention, but some of his followers eventually pulled away and established kind of like splinter groups. Mm-hmm. And there were some students that would come to Mid-America from the Baptist Missionary Association, for example. And I would have them in class and would have discussions with them. And I realized I didn't know a whole lot about this. Plus, I had to teach some of it in my Baptist history class. So, you know, that stimulated my interest.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned some of the other denominations, maybe, you know, having heroes or having great fathers of the faith, like a Calvin or a Luther or a Cranmer or something like this. And you also mentioned in the preface that J.R. Graves is a controversial figure. For risk of putting you on the line. Is J.R. Graves a hero of Baptist life, or some sort of level of that, or is it just more complex than that? How would you sum up his contribution to Baptist?
It's a little more complex. There are some who would see him as a hero,
mm-hmm.
some who would hold to many of his ideas even today. But at the same time, there are many in Southern Baptist life who are somewhat uncomfortable with many of his positions. And in the epilogue, I talk about what's called the Tennessee tradition, which he's the main shaper of the Tennessee tradition. But the historian who developed that idea, Buddy Sheridan, who's retired now but at Mercer, I guess he may still teach a bit there. He laid out four different types of traditions in Southern Baptist life. Then Leon Macbeth came along and gave another one. So you're talking about a denomination that has at least five streams mm-hmm. that help mm-hmm. explain, you know, where it's come from. And not all those streams are compatible with each other mm-hmm. in all respects. I mean, they have some common beliefs, but Graves would represent, I think, a current that not all Baptists would endorse.
So the book is James Robinson Graves, Staking the Boundaries of Baptist Identity by James A. Patterson, one of our favorite professors here at Union. So what's next for you? Any research projects on the docket or are you going to maybe just take some time and enjoy your family or?
Well, I've recently finished some shorter projects and some of these are going to be coming out, many of them actually in 2012. It's just the timing was such that that's going to be a good year for me publishing wise.
That's great. Congratulations.
And I'm sifting through where I want to go next if I want to try another book before I retire.
Do you enjoy the writing process?
I enjoy it, yes, but I also find it's demanding at times.
Sure.
I mean, some days go better than others. The research I enjoy doing, the writing, I really have to focus, and I tend to work better with deadlines,
mm-hmm.
you know, than
mm-hmm.
just sort of
right.
trying to do something with no
right.
specific endpoint in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm sorting through some stuff. I have this interest that I've had for a while. I did a chapter on this a while back on what I call the theocratic impulse in American Protestantism, and I'm toying with the idea, well, maybe I should develop that into a book because mm. – It would go back even to the colonial period, and Roger Williams is kind of an interesting figure. He wasn't a Baptist for very long, but he had an impact on Baptists, and he would be sort of the opposite of the theocratic impulse, you know, going up against the Puritans who held that notion. And I may move in that direction. I've got to think it through a little bit more.
That sounds really interesting and ties in with your political science background as well. And well, let me ask you this then. How does your research and your interest in the things that you pursue in writing projects, how do those inform your teaching? And how do you incorporate that? What is your life like in the classroom in terms of how that, you know, goes? Do you walk some of your students through the research process sometimes? Or?
Well, actually, I did. I recently did the Doctor of Ministry mm-hmm. seminar
yeah.
in Memphis that TRU came down and instructed them on some of the issues of library research. And one of the things I did in there is I actually have one of these boxes. It's almost like a banker's box, like a file box. And I had all my stuff from my book in it. And so I just took the box down there and I showed them the different things that were in the box mm-hmm. and how that explained the way I do research. So kind of on a hands-on way, I was telling them, you know, you don't have to use my system, but you need a system when you do your dissertation project. Mm-hmm. In terms of content, I would say probably I teach a Baptist history class every other year, and I teach history of Christianity every year. And so those are the courses that most likely would draw on the kinds of things I've been doing. And I do cover Graves in Baptist history. And, of course, I have a lot more now on him than I had when I first started teaching Baptist history. So there are times when material that I have learned from the research process does get into my classwork.
And when you teach history of Christianity, do you cover the entire Western – well, more so than that now? I mean,
well, in the master's level, we do two semesters, Church History 1 and 2,
right.
undergraduate. We try to cover all of it in one semester. It's quite a challenge.
That's a lot to get through.
That has to be much more selective. And I don't give as much attention to Baptists in there simply because of time considerations. But I always tell them, now, I do teach a course in Baptist history, and you know, I would invite you to come and explore that in more detail.
Well, based on Baptist history in the past and what has gone on before, what do you think the future of Baptist life holds?
That's a big
I'm
question.
A historian, not a prophet.
Yeah.
It's 2012.
Right, okay.
It's a year of prophecy.
The world's going to end December.
Paul's been up all night.
Okay. Well, I think it's interesting the Southern Baptist Convention, to take one Baptist movement, I think is at an interesting point in its history where, you know, some churches no longer use Baptist in their name, even though they remain active in Baptist life. Mm-hmm. And there's questions about should the convention itself change its name.
Right.
Dr. Dockery has been on a committee that's looking into that and all. There's been, of course, funding issues, partly because of the economy, but, you know, a certain amount of lack of direction maybe in a lot of Baptist churches. But I see a younger generation that I believe has a great deal of potential in Southern Baptist life. And some of them are getting involved in denominational structures. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the hope of the future.
I
think the SBC could have a kind of resurgence or revival that might be led by this younger generation of preachers and professors.
So 100 years from now, looking back at this era, how about that? What if I phrased it that way? Do you see this as a pivotal time in Baptist life, crossroads, so to speak?
I think so. I think the next 10 years will have a lot to say about what the Southern Baptist Convention will be like for quite a while and whether it will even be called the Southern Baptist Convention or some other name. But I think the opportunities are there, but, you know, we'll see whether those opportunities are taken advantage of.
Now, Dr. Patterson, one last question before we let you get back to your day. I understand that you rap. Is that true? I won't ask you to rap for us on the podcast, although...
this is new to me. I have not heard this.
Yeah. I wouldn't,
hidden talents. Wow.
Yes. I wouldn't say it's especially good art. I have attempted to communicate certain historical truths through that medium.
Wow.
Briefly.
Yes.
when I start a class, I will usually do that and have the content geared toward the class I'm teaching. And actually twice in chapel I have done raps. In 2008, Reformation Day, I was asked to speak. And the Phillies had just recently won the World Series, so I was feeling good about that. And I did a Martin Luther rap. And then just a year ago this day, this Friday a year ago, at the beginning of spring semester, I had the Founders Day lecture. And it was on J.R. Graves because he was a union trustee, and I did a J.R. Graves rap. And those can be – you can hear those at the audio project at the off the union website. I think the raps are included in the taping that was done.
Very good. I'm going to check those
out. Well, yeah, we'll have to link to those. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, so one last thing. Where can people get your book?
In the library.
If they want to purchase a copy.
The Lifeway store here on campus, I'm sure we'll have copies as soon as they're released from the warehouse. I probably am not supposed to say this, but Amazon is offering it as a pre-pub, and it's discounted at Amazon, so that's another place they could get it. CBD has online book ordering, and they are showing it as well.
Very good. Now, when will the official release be?
Well, the book is printed.
Right.
And they have announced before that March 1st would be the release date, so I don't know, since it's already printed, if they may move that up, but at the latest, March 1st.
Okay.
A big congratulations to you on this new publication. We wish you a fine 2012, and we're very grateful for you and for your being willing to give us your time today. It's been a good conversation.
Thank you very much.
I
enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. All right.
We're back, and we want to thank once again our special guest, Dr. James Patterson.
The rapper.
The rapper.
Yeah.
Yes, that was a revelation that I was quite surprised by.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem the type.
No, he doesn't, but people will surprise you.
Yes.
He's a really great individual. I've enjoyed getting to know him. Really interesting background and kind of broad, sort of research interest. And so, fun to talk to him. We're really grateful for Dr. Patterson being on the show today. We're excited about this new publication of his. It is available in the library if you would like to read it.
Mm-hmm.
You can also get iPads in the library now, as we mentioned, and other resources. So stop by and see us at the Union Library, where studying every day could help you perform better academically. We look forward to talking to you next time. Have a great day. I'm TR.
And I am Paul. And until the next podcast, take care.
Take care.